her aunt, Parveen Sharvani, in Pakistan. All the best to you and your family, Nermeen. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Berkdine, Augusta Messiah Rose, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Malkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, and Mary Conlon. Our general manager is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Hugh Graham, Dennis Moynihan. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Wear a mask.
Mask. She was saying mask. Wear a mask. It's 6 o'clock, and you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook. It's time for Off the Wall. Everybody, the program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you tonight, joined by Kyle.
Yo, 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 coming in loud and clear. Hello, hello, hello.
You're loud. I'm not sure how clear you
are.
Am
I here?
Yeah, yeah. You're here. You're here. and hopefully our listeners are here as well. Greetings. It's another Tuesday evening, and you are tuned into the Mighty USB with another action-packed hour where we discuss what's going on in the world. And, Kyle, first of all, my condolences. My condolences. Today is the death day of Blackberries everywhere. You want to tell us just what's going on? Because I kind of thought Blackberries faded from the scene a while ago.
Well, you'd be right. I mean, that for most people is exactly what it has been. There's been very little interest in this particular device for a very long time, but for institutions that have slowly adopted all the other devices that are really popular. So, in this case, a smaller and smaller group of mostly enthusiasts and people that kind of had to have these sorts of devices. They were unique. They were solid. Mm-hmm. They were, like, well-built, I think.
Yeah, they seem pretty sturdy. You know, they had little keyboards on them. And people swore by them. I don't understand why they have to get rid of them. But the company, BlackBerry, what's left of them, said that as of January 4th, it would no longer support the devices. They're shifting from making mobile phones to making washing machines. Although I misread that. Software-based business models, whatever that is. You might as well make washing machines, really. You had a good thing here. What's why kill the BlackBerry? I don't get it.
Well, I think it's mostly a customer base they're losing, and so it's been a wild ride. Competition-wise, because there's so many other companies that are doing a lot of business, and it really eroded the customer base and the amount of people that could purchase a device. So they're changing forms, mm-hmm. and the uniqueness of the software and so forth is.
What's going on with your microphone? You're fighting with you.
I don't know.
You literally have both hands on your microphone. Is it not cooperating with you?
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be.
At moments, you sound very clear, and then it sounds like you're on the other side of the room, even though you haven't moved. So I'm not sure what the issue is. I don't know what you're doing to the board, but I must say you have to stay on that side, because whenever these buttons are touched, things go haywire. No, you're fine. You're fine. Just keep talking to the microphone.
In any event,
we can hear you.
So the software architecture will be in vehicles, I think, was one a new business that I guess they feel there's less competition in. So that's the as much as I know.
Well, anyway, you have several BlackBerries still. I guess what, they're paperweights now? There's nothing you can do with them?
Yes, I have old hardware that I'll probably try to take apart or play around with. And it's really kind of awful the way people were broken off and just sort of left.
Right.
It'll be interesting to see if people can do project. Like, there are base station projects you could emulate and run your own BlackBerry Enterprise server.
Yeah, maybe people could write to us and say, what kinds of things can you do with your old BlackBerries? OTW@2600.com. Just write to us and give us suggestions. Clean suggestions, please. We've gotten all the other ones.
The operating system is unique. As I was saying, it's a real-time operating system known as QNX, mm-hmm. and it is schedule prioritized. So certain things get prioritized in a different way. This is on the a lower level software design, and that was largely what they were known for, is the push email. Back when email on
push email, wow,
yeah, you got email on your phone. Can you imagine?
No way.
Exactly.
Email on your phone.
Isn't that a shock?
How is such a thing possible?
Well, it was a very possible thing early on, and literally, I think basically there was nothing else. There was no option. So this handset that's going away was the only way, unless you had a Palm Pilot or something else. There was, I remember, a lot of very, very tiny laptops that were just outrageously expensive that were kind of, it was just nudging in there into the phone market. And anyway, this email was very desirable, specifically for government. So think politicians and agencies of sorts.
Obama had one.
He was a known enthusiast of this device. And various companies, you know, they would deploy these in a very large scale. They would run the servers themselves. They would handle their own billing and their own plans and schemes as they liked. It allowed for employing your own kind of certificates and encryption schemes to a certain degree, probably considered outdated or outmoded now.
Did you like the keyboard, though, the keyboard on the old BlackBerry?
Favorite part.
Little tiny keys, but you had no trouble with that.
I loved it.
Better than touchscreen.
Absolutely. I could, you know, I think this was something early on with Nokia devices. They had short keys. People would be lauded for how fast, or they would think highly of themselves if they could create an SMS very quickly on the number pad by double clicking for various letters. That got replaced, and that was another aspect of it. The physical keyboard was so loved and appreciated.
I don't understand why can't an Android or an iPhone come out with a physical keypad if people want that. Is that incompatible with their network or something? It seems like it's a hardware decision. So why not simply humor the people who like those kinds of keyboards and offer an option?
Well, there are neat designs and attempts at incorporating physical keys with, like, sliding screens and things now that unfold and all kinds of wild stuff. Of course, tablets came into popularity. They have, like, attachable keyboards, and that's kind of a workaround. But the form factor of the screen being that rectangular shape everyone is so accustomed to now, that won out, and implementing it in software along with many other gestures became a huge user interface and design focus. And even that got pushed development-wise, I think, away from now, like, voice control, which is extremely popular for all kinds of things. So, yeah, even the software keyboards aren't necessarily something that are being honed and perfected the way we might think they are. People's attitudes and choices or desires shift in the marketplace. So, yeah, it hasn't been anything quite like it.
Yeah. Well, they say that even if they were not phasing out the BlackBerry, it would be pretty much impossible to run it because Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, they're all phasing out 3G technology. BlackBerry's use 3G, so they won't be usable in that sense either.
Yeah, they really tried. They stopped making their own hardware many years ago, and then after BlackBerry 10 was released, they started trying to implement Android as something that ran on top of the QNX OS. And in that way, you could run Android apps, for instance, and stuff like that. And it just became closer and closer to one of the sort of dominant players in phone operating systems. So as that took precedence, I think some of their natural or unique features just became underutilized. Their secure messaging platforms, all the things that were there. No one really used them. They would use things like WhatsApp or whatever other communication stuff on top of it, and then they started using third party manufacturers. They would do ODMs, original design manufacturers, that would basically license and otherwise produce the handsets. Increasingly through BlackBerry 10, with more Android operating systems, so. And less, well, of course, still some of the QNX real-time stuff I was talking about, but a lot more emphasis on that Android.
Well, are you familiar with the BlackBerry Key 2? Have you heard of that? It's made by a Chinese company, TCL. And that runs on Android, and it's not affected. It's not affected by the change. So
there are a few models that are not.
If you want a genuine Chinese-made BlackBerry runs Android, this is really the only option at this point.
And that became it. It's like a lot of those manufacturers were making generic versions of devices anyway, so they were sort of thrust into making a specific – the sort of hardware that was desirable and is very commonplace. So as that those attempts were there, now they're just going in a completely different direction and – will no doubtly be in some vehicle or another, and I really think the OS is still worthwhile and interesting, but as far as being popular, it's in the history books now.
Well, again, condolences on
thank you
on death day for BlackBerry.
It was a good run, and you know, got a lot out of it.
Well, you know, we were also looking forward to snow a couple of days ago. We didn't get a single flake, so I'm really upset by that. And I guess the consolation is I wanted to take a drive down to Virginia on I-95, and we decided not to do that. And it's probably a good thing because, well, we might have met Tim Kaine, you know, the Virginia senator, because he and a bunch of other people were stuck in traffic for 27 hours on I-95 in the snow and ice. I can't even conceive of that. I hear about these things happening in China sometimes, but I have not heard about it happening here. 27 hours stuck. It wasn't even that much snow. There was a storm, but it really wasn't. It wasn't insane. But then I don't even know what you do for 27 hours. How do you go to the bathroom? You know, do you just walk up and down the highway visiting with people, or what if you run out of gas? Yeah, a lot of questions. Would have been an interesting adventure.
It reminds me of some trips where we'd been stuck. I think in Germany we were on the highway once. There was some sort of accident.
On the Autobahn. We went on the Autobahn. And there was an accident, and everything ground to a halt, and you could actually go outside, walk around on the Autobahn in the middle of it. Nobody was moving.
I think there's a picture. I was sitting in the middle of the that road.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just amazing that everybody was walking around, talking to one another.
Well, you were lying down on the highway at one point. It's just, you could do whatever you wanted.
We were like yards, like many car lengths away from our own vehicle, just exploring and marveling at this wild incident we really had no control over.
Well, okay, so we didn't get to participate in that, but I had some fun. I had some real fun this week because I inadvertently pissed off some right wingers.
I heard about that
on Twitter. Yeah. I say things all the time on Twitter. If you want to follow me, by the way, it's E-Man Goldstein, because it doesn't fit. It's too long for Twitter names, apparently. So the U-E-L on the manual doesn't fit, so it's E-M-M-A-N Goldstein. Yeah. I saw this idiotic tweet. I don't know how I got to it, because I don't follow these people, but it was forwarded to me somehow. And this guy does a show on the Patriot Channel on Sirius XM. It's the most god-awful channel. That's nothing but right-wing zealots and white supremacists and things like that. This guy's name is Tim Young. He has 350,000 followers on Twitter. And if you look at his sign-in page on Twitter, you'll see the background is a warning from Twitter saying this account posts all kinds of fraudulent material. And he's posting that as like a trophy. He's proud of it.
A screen grab that he's made as his like wallpaper.
And their latest thing they're all up in arms about is Marjorie Taylor Greene losing her Twitter account because she's a dumbass and keeps promoting all kinds of fake things concerning COVID-19 that'll get people killed. All sorts of other things that basically are being shut down because people don't want this crap. and because the companies that run these sites have every right to have some level of standards and not just open up the floodgates to any idiot that wants to say whatever they want and spout all kinds of falsehoods and lies.
Well, and to say nothing of the fact that it's caustic and stirring up a lot of people who are wildly misled.
Anyway, this guy said, this is the post that I guess triggered me. No, it's not. I don't get triggered, but it made me say something. He said, YouTube removing the Malone interview with Joe Rogan should be enough for everyone to know they're trying to hide something. Oh, they're trying to delete some idiocy, whatever. Not allowing legitimate alternative scientific thought from the narrative on COVID should make everyone wake up. Okay, so to that, I simply said, simple. It's not, quote, legitimate alternative scientific thought. Quote, I just realized now I can't say this word on the air. it's bat crap crazy. All right, use your imaginations. Anti-vax fiction that will get people killed, and anti-Semitic, too. Oh, my God. That was the thing. to be accused of being anti-Semitic. That is what triggered all these right-wing people. And I was getting hundreds of hate posts directed at me as a result of this. Now, why did I call them anti-Semitic? Good question. Okay, I'll tell you why I called them anti-Semitic. Because they are comparing mask mandates to the Holocaust. Okay? I'm sorry, but if you're comparing guidelines from health officials, government officials, what have you, saying, hey, we're in the middle of a pandemic, wearing a mask when you go inside a store is advised, and we're going to make this a policy until this pandemic is gone. If you equate that to 6 million Jews being forced into camps and gassed in ovens, or shot to death, or all the horrible things that happened to them, if you actually have the gall and the ignorance to say that this compares to that, yeah, you're an anti-Semitic idiot, okay? Period. You know, the replies that I got, you know, when you argue with these people, if you accuse them of something, in their defense, very oftentimes, they will help you. They will basically show you your points laid out much better than they were initially. Here's one. This person said perhaps going against the narrative of Big Pharma actually is anti-Semitic. And they came up with this pre-pasted list. CDC Director Rochelle Walensky is a Jew. CDC Deputy Director Anne Schuchat is a Jew. CDC Chief of Staff Sherry Berger is a Jew. And just going all down, I think there's like 15 different names of all different people that have positions, that have titles, and they're all Jews. And that is the defense against being called anti-Semitic. It's having a pre-constructed list of Jews that are in high offices and saying, yeah, you know what? They are telling us what to do. So maybe being anti-Big Pharma is the same thing. And I got so many things like this. It was, and I had great fun too. A lot of people get stressed out on Twitter, and to me, this was like the highlight of my week because it was fun. It was fun replying to all the idiots or just seeing what people were saying, because I know these are the right people to be opposed to. It's not like I'm arguing with my friends or anything like that, even though I like that as well. But in no way did I feel like I was on the wrong side of anything, and it felt good to stand up for what I believe in. I get tired of preaching to the choir. I get tired of basically saying things that other people just agree with, or that we all get together and say, oh my God, it's so terrible, we can't do anything, we're doomed. That stresses me out. This doesn't. And I suggest, you know, if you want to feel better, go piss off some people that are ignorant, racist, white nationalists, anti-vaxxers. Go ahead. And it'll help you with your arguments. You'll know why you believe what you believe. You know? It's and this idiot on the Patriot Channel accused me of being ignorant and compliant, not realizing what direction things are in. Nazis used health to otherize people and divide, and showing your papers was a thing. Here we are, and you support it. To which I said, you know me so well. And apparently you do, because I'm somebody who's compliant, who goes along with the rules, who doesn't question. Yeah, that's me. Do your damn research. You claim to do research on COVID-19. It would take you 2 seconds to realize who you're talking to. This was brilliant. Somebody with the name of Winston Smith said, you are not a serious person. He said that to Emmanuel Goldstein. Winston Smith versus Emmanuel Goldstein. It's on. I don't know if that was set up that way intentionally, but and someone else, my great-grandparents from Germany would disagree with you. Yeah, you know what? You might want to indicate what side they were on before saying that. It just went on for hours and hours and hours, and then, boom, gone. That's how Twitter works. That's how it happens. But there's a lot of idiocy out there, and you have to confront it. You have to call it out for what it is. Otherwise, it sticks, and you wind up with these people in power telling you what to do. You know, they have absolutely no clue as to what's going on themselves scientifically, historically. I mean, these are people who don't know what the Holocaust was. They don't know what a pandemic is. And we elect people like this to be our leaders. And then we wonder why everything falls apart. It happens locally. It happens in other parts of the country. It happens nationally. It happens globally. So every opportunity you have, stand up. Voice your opinion. Be respectful. I don't think I really was nasty to anybody, but I will call people out for being anti-Semitic or racist. But I'm not going to make fun of the way people talk, the way people look, or even condemn their decisions. You know, here's the thing that really gets me about this this whole anti-vax movement, if you want to call it that, is that people are claiming that they're being forced to get vaccinated, you know, and hence the comparison to Nazi Germany, where people were forced to do things. Much worse things, by the way, but whatever. Basically, if you decide not to get the vaccine, you don't have to get the vaccine. No one's being forced to get the vaccine. If people are running down the street with needles, all right, injecting people who don't want to be injected, I will stand with you and say, that's wrong. That's not what I want. No, you have the choice. You don't have to get the vaccine, period. So you can't go around saying that the vaccine is being forced upon you. But now you're saying, oh, but, you know, if I don't get the vaccine, I can't go into BJ's. I can't go to Price Club. I can't go to a bar. I can't do all these things I want to do. Yeah, because you're not vaccinated, you dumbass. That is the reason why people need to get vaccinated, because there's a contagious pandemic. That's what it's about. You can't just say, yeah, I don't want to do that, but I want to continue living normally. No, you are saying, by saying that you don't want to get vaccinated, you don't want to live normally anymore. I am so sick of this. I want this to end. I don't want to wear masks everywhere. I don't want to have to worry about this damn pandemic or the next variant or anything like that. I want it over with. The people who don't want to get the vaccine, you're making it linger. You're effectively voting for more of this. And it's because of you that it's sticking around. And also because we're not very good at getting the vaccine to all parts of the world. And that needs to happen. We need to all get together and do that. You know, we need to figure out a way that we can supply those less fortunate parts of the world with vaccines and just hope that they're smarter than the people around here who refuse to get the vaccine. Because once people are vaccinated, this will go away. Just like smallpox went away. That's how it works. Listen to science. Don't listen to politicians. I agree. Politicians don't know what they're talking about. Scientists do. And if you find yourself in a situation where you're making your stand, but you don't trust the World Health Organization to tell you about health, you don't trust the Centers for Disease Control to tell you about disease, you don't trust people who work in science and dedicate their entire lives to this, you think you know better, I got news for you. You don't. And you're affecting a lot of people around you. So that's why we speak up. That's why we fight back. And that's why we have to keep the pressure on so we can get back to normal. I'll sit down now.
Yeah, I'm with you. It shouldn't be that you distrust the Food and Drug Administration for what's in food and...
What do they know about food? What do they know about drugs?
What kind of drugs there are.
Yeah, that's I admire distrust. I admire asking questions. I do. But I also admire listening to the answers. And I admire weighing the evidence. And I admire science. Okay, so all those things are being thrown out the window. And these false narratives. And you know, there's also people who say, well, why are you so afraid of a dialogue? Why are you so afraid of having a conversation? Because we've had the conversation. How many times do we have to have the same conversation? I want to have a new conversation. Can we move on? We've established that gravity is a law. We've established that the earth is round. Do we have to keep debating these issues? please. There are so many more things we could be doing. The Webb Space Telescope, it's out there. It's a million miles away. It's unfolding. It's going to show us ancient civilizations and who knows what from across the universe. Things like that. You know, there's going to be East Side Access to Grand Central Terminal. Those are two of the most amazing things ever.
Instead, this perpetual navel gazing.
It's just too much. It's just too much. Meanwhile, you have all these candidates running around the country, election denying, COVID denying, logic denying candidates, and they're basically being put in place to do things like overturn elections. You know, January 6th is 2 days away. What are you doing for January 6th? Anything special?
Being calm.
I'm going to break something. No, I'm going to throw something on the ground. Just break it. I'll feel better then.
No, you don't have to get to that part.
No, we should do that every now and then.
Talk after the show. After the show.
We have too many plates, so, you know, and I'll clean it up, too. But the point is, you can't just ignore these things and let them go by. A year ago, we were concerned about what was going to happen on January 6th before January 6th because the writing was on the wall. And I'm concerned now, not about January 6th so much, because, you know, what are they going to do on January 6th? But I'm concerned about all the days following that. I'm concerned about how elections are going to be controlled and manipulated, how people are going to be kept from voting, how basically gerrymandering is going to prevent some voices from being heard and allow other voices to be heard so much more. You know, on this country, you know, you realize how many ways voters are disenfranchised. You know, if it's gerrymandering, then you could wind up in a district with no representation whatsoever. If you can't get to the polls because you live in a poor neighborhood, well, your vote just doesn't count at all. You don't even get to vote. You know, and if you do get to vote, if you live in a state where there are more people on one side than another, your vote counts for absolutely nothing because it's all or nothing in our crazy electoral college system. So you could have somebody with very little public support, and they win. Unquestionably, they win. And this just keeps happening over and over again. So after a while, you lose faith. You lose faith in the system completely. And when the people that you do support finally do get in, and they're tied down by all kinds of bureaucratic nonsense or political scheming, you lose faith in that. Then you believe that it's all the same, and you just stop caring. And that's when they win, because that's what they want.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a strategy, and wearing people out of this this whole process, and it shouldn't be that you have to have many types of ID. You know, your registration card should be all you need to vote, and we shouldn't intimidate people once they get to the polls. That kind of stuff, that's what you get in some places.
Mm-hmm.
And forget being able to mail something or do anything convenient, maybe outside of the work day or work week. These are all crazy things, but now the specter of which they're looming on the horizon, and it's adding to the sort of infuriating reminder that this week will be.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, here in Long Island, we felt the effects from the last election, which to me is just another indication of how inept Democrats are at politics, because you had a situation where basically lies were spread around, basically claiming that Democrats are communists, Democrats want open borders, Democrats want crime, Democrats are basically teaching children to hate white kids, and all these things that are so bizarre that I think we spent more time laughing at what they were saying than actually trying to reach people so they could realize this is all nonsense. This is how there was a Republican wave, when there shouldn't have been a Republican wave anywhere after the disaster of COVID in 2020 and how we've lost nearly a million people as a result of this pandemic, which was not fought the way it should have been fought in the first year. Absolutely not. So we wound up with a new county executive in Nassau County, and that was sad because Laura Curran, I believe, is the name of the previous county executive. She was doing a good job. She was, you know, not divisive. She worked across the aisle. She had, you know, she vetoed that crazy bill that would have allowed cops to sue protesters if they were offended by what they were saying and things like that. And now you got this guy who was elected just on the reactionary vote because people were so afraid of communist Democrats. And now you have this guy here who is already proving himself to be inept. Republican Bruce Blakeman, sworn in yesterday. Masks and vaccinations were not required for that event. And basically he's saying that we're going to be normal or something stupid like that. You gotta wonder what is going to happen in Nassau County as a result of that. I mean, he's saying all the things like he wants more police, which people respond to, but when you have more police doing bad things, well, that's not really helping anybody, is it?
So, well, and the amount of them maybe would increase the likelihood of bad things, bad interactions. You have less control, less training availability or resources for different priorities and so forth, and engagement with the community and that sort of thing takes a backseat to deploying a force like that.
Well, this is one of the guys that believes everybody should just make their choice and act like nothing is different. That's not how you control a pandemic. That's not how you bring it to an end. Make your choice, yes, but when you make your choice, deal with the consequences of that choice. There are certain things that will be different if you don't get vaccinated, period. That is how it works. Now, the GOP has also taken control of the Suffolk County legislature, but here's what's interesting. Right before the Democrats lost control, which was January 1st, guess what they did? They voted on redistricting. Yeah, they actually made new districts that will last for 10 years that benefit Democrats. Yeah, this is the kind of thing that we're talking about, except this time it went for the other side. And guess what? Republicans went ballistic. They say the plan violated the Suffolk County Charter. They're going to be in court. They're introducing bills. It's okay when they do it. But when it happens to the other side, oh, my God, how can you possibly do this? Now, it's a joke. It's a joke. Obviously, the same rules have to apply to everybody. And this is how the system works. Do I think the system should work this way? No, I don't think the system should work that way. But if you change it, you have to change it for everybody, not just for Democrats. So that is an interesting story that's coming locally right here. Oh, and I guess since it's after January, Brookhaven is definitely going to allow marijuana to be sold in dispensaries because December 31st was the deadline for any town or village to opt out. And I think we're where we left it last week, where Smithtown has opted out and a bunch of other towns, Islip and other areas in Suffolk County have opted out ignorantly, I think, but they'll see the light.
And miss out a great deal, but that's their choice. So yeah, we'll see. Good for Brookhaven. If they're not announcing anything, it's probably they don't have much of a scheme or a thing that will allow people to apply and what kind of zoning initiative there'll be throughout. Those are all considerations, and maybe that stuff's ongoing, but. As soon as we get more news, we'll definitely cover that again.
I'm looking forward to it.
Here on the chronic feature of Off the Wall.
We should have a chronic feature. You're right. Why don't we read one letter, then we're going to get into another feature. You can write to us, otw@2600.com. We'd love to hear from our listeners. I've been thinking about the story you all relayed a couple of weeks ago about the maskless EMTs parked in the fire lane. They were parked right in front of the door of a restaurant because they were picking up food, and they had their ambulance there. And that's fine, whatever. You want to do that, I don't know why you can't park in a parking space, but fine. What I objected to was the fact that they were inside not wearing masks when everybody else was, except for the people who were dining. And, you know, this whole ridiculing of, well, how can the virus not affect people who are eating while it affects people who are walking in the door? It's because you're in close proximity to other people as you walk in the door. When you're at a table, you're isolated from the rest of the place. The virus doesn't just jump around for the entire building. It doesn't work that way. It's not like a laser beam or a bunch of balls being thrown around. It's not how it works. Anyway, I've also noticed regular people parking in fire lanes more frequently. Okay, I don't know if it's something that's out of control. I'd love to come up with a clever hack to scare them straight without being a total cop and calling the fire marshal. Well, you can't call the fire marshal. They were the fire department. They were the Terryville Fire Department, so it's kind of hard to call the fire marshal. And I don't think they were in their district. I think they were traveling to a different district. Maybe we could set one fire department against another. That might be fun. Anyway, since I know you notice these sorts of things too, what is the deal with people driving around with defaced / obscured / covered / missing license plates? I hadn't noticed this. This has become very common within the last 5 years, go figure. And I suspect they're doing it in order to skirt automated systems like tolls and red light cameras, things like that, to be able to drive like aggressive jerks with impunity, and because they can. These people are almost all white, driving large pickup trucks covered in those thin Blue Lives Matter stickers, and seems to be reason enough for them to be given a pass, even though it necessarily makes police officers' jobs harder, like with hit-and-run accidents and things like that. So I'll pose the same question again. Do you have any clever ideas for addressing this problem? Signed, PRD. Well, PRD, thank you for that letter. And that's a problem. You know, I noticed so many aggressive drivers. A lot of them driving pickup trucks, a lot of them female too. It's really something that affects a lot of people on all sides, because the rest of us are have to deal with these idiots coming up behind you and getting angry because you're not somehow jumping over the car in front of you and letting them go. They're always in a hurry. They're always irate. Something should be done about them. Police need to crack down harder and not use the stupid Blue Lives flag as some kind of pass. Because it's not. These people don't care about you at all. And, you know, January 6th should have proven that by now. So, this is something that needs to be called out. It just needs to be called out, documented as much as possible. You know, we drove across the country a couple of months ago. And we drove through the South and the Midwest and as Trump country as you can possibly get. And we did not see anywhere near the amount of anger on the road that we see here. People were courteous. People drove like sane people. And it's not like they had something to prove. Here it's different. Here it's like everybody feels like they need to stand up and be loud and be aggressive and be intimidating. And we don't have to take that.
I think it's because there's less space. There's so many people and so little space. The density is incredible in an urban environment. Even out on the island and stuff, it's a crowded space. There's people driving incredibly fast.
Yeah, but so is New York City, and people don't drive like that in New York City.
Right. I grant you that. I think that on the highways and byways and FDR, though, there's just as much craziness and commercial traffic and the
but
like.
I don't think you're going to get some redneck pickup truck person blaring, you know, their horn at you and shining their lights and doing all kinds of intimidating things. Yeah, I don't think you'll see that in New York City as much as you see that out here.
Right. I'm not saying that there's. I'm not making a distinction between the city and here so much as I'm making a distinction between a highly dense populated area where you're just going to run into more people, mm-hmm. as opposed to where we were driving long distances, like what a trucker would do or right. something. Just spread out. You're going even faster. You're spread out a little bit more.
Fine, but when we go out east where there is more space, I get the same thing there too. I don't think it's. I mean, I think that contributes to it, but I don't think that's it entirely. I think it's attitude, and I think the attitude around here is just unhealthy.
Right, but I'm saying the density makes people feel crowded in, so when they get out on the road, they want their, like, space and their freedom, and they like, you know, really try to dominate and push others and compete, you know, as American as we are.
But this
right?
wasn't the case 10 years ago, not like this. Sure, there are always bad drivers, but there's something different now, and the space hasn't really changed that much. I don't know.
I know there's inattentiveness, there's more distractions. Because there's so much navigation on cell phones now, I think people's phones are more, like, in their hand. I can't tell you how many people I see driving holding a phone.
Oh, yeah, that's bad, of course.
It's, like, right under their nose while they're, like, inattentiveness.
My contention is that there's just a lot more dumbasses that feel empowered.
I don't dispute that. I'm, okay. I'm with you. I'm with you. I'm not arguing at all.
I feel like I'm going to meet the press, but we're going to move on to our sustaining feature. And that is, of course, Films of the Year That Was. We're up to the year 2011 in our Academy Award-winning film marathon that started years ago, and we're into the last decade. We're into the last 10 years of this. 2011, okay. So which film do you want to start with, the domestic winner or the international winner?
The international winner.
Okay. You know, I'm a little confused now because lately the domestic winners have been foreign films, so I don't understand exactly what the criteria is. Whatever. Maybe it's English language, but then again, the international ones have been English. You know, it doesn't matter. Which what film is the international film?
Jodaye Nadir Azimin.
Well, I've asked you to read it in English.
A Separation.
A Separation. Say it the other way again.
Jodaye Nadir Azimin.
Wow. That's either Arabic or Persian.
Persian.
Persian. Okay. It was an Iranian film. The first time an Iranian film has won the Academy Award, A Separation. So what was this about?
This film was about a breakup of a couple, a middle-class Iranian couple, and they have a daughter, and it's all about how a caregiver and the family dynamic is changing with their aging father in the care, and the husband is sort of at wit's end and really trying to balance all of these things, and the caretaker screws up, nearly kills grandpa or his father.
This woman from a lower class environment, I guess, because they're kind of looked down upon. And she comes, long commute every day to take care of this guy's aging father.
Not unusual.
Who's like 90 and has dementia, yep. And it's really depressing. But also very well portrayed because you feel like it's really happening.
It's heavy. This film is very, very heavy. And I was a little bit... I think I missed some subtleties, like the caregiver. I didn't believe certain parts of it as much, and I didn't understand the class dynamic as much, mm-hmm. going into it, my own ignorance, of course. And I just felt like it was unraveling so quickly,
yeah.
And to such dire effect. Basically, in one moment, he's asking her to leave. Like, get out of my house.
The caregiver.
That's right, and he's... He's in this apartment that is sort of higher up, I believe second, third story, whatever.
Yeah, second, or third floor.
So the stairwell's right in front of his doorway. She stumbles. Apparently she was pregnant and loses a child, and he had no idea. Then he's disputing, well, she didn't fall down the stairs.
Okay, you're taking her side, Kyle, and I object to that, because, you know, the railing was in front of the apartment. She couldn't have possibly fallen down the stairs that way, and maybe she had the miscarriage beforehand. Okay, so
they had a whole scene.
You get pulled into this, and a lot of the film is arguing. if you don't know anything about Iranian society, you'll think that it just takes place in court constantly, because the film begins with the couple having this separation battle The woman wants a divorce so she can travel abroad and take her daughter with her, and the judge is basically countering that, and the husband is as well.
You see some his role, gender roles at play.
Yeah, it's well done. It really is realistic, but it can be a bit confusing. For instance, this money goes missing. And it's actually a perfectly rational explanation as to where the money went and who took it. But you miss it because it's just said in passing at one point in the film, and most people just didn't realize the significance of it and didn't connect the dots. But other than that, I think it was effective. If you're interested in definitely a foreign environment, like modern-day Tehran, this is the film to see, to learn something about that.
Location shooting, you see cars, you see just subtle details, the license plates. When have you ever, do you know about an Iranian license plate? It's fascinating from that view. We've talked about other films that are shot here in the state of New York, in the city, all over familiar, iconic places in the U.S. Same goes for places you've never seen on the screen before or never even traveled to. So that aspect just... So being so real, and seeing the art they make of this story was captivating. It was captivating, but it was heavy and long, and like you said, so much tension and interpersonal stuff. I was getting invested and basically like wanting, like you said, basically like I don't know. I was getting incredulous. I was getting like...
Well, we had to pause the film and argue about it for 25 minutes as to who was right and who was wrong.
It was stressing me out. And also, yeah, I knew the argument was total, like...
Our neighbors complained because they were making so much... It just really...
I was trying to get some more tea, and then I basically already made up my mind about the argument they were having.
Of course you did.
And there was, like, 5 minutes left of the film, so it didn't matter anyway.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, it was fun. We were there. We strapped in. We were ready for the adventure, and it was gripping, and we held on.
It's interesting because this film was universally acclaimed around the world. In fact, Woody Allen was up for a nomination. I think he won either Best Screenplay or Best Director or something that year. But he said, you know what, this film, A Separation from Iran, was the better film. It should have won. And you know, a lot of people said similar things like that. So that alone should be cause for people to check it out. A Separation from Iran, 2011. You can see it on digital platforms. It's super simple to see these foreign films, which I'm very impressed with as well.
Also, his like little like mousy daughter was so demonic. That stare.
Oh, come on! I liked her. She was authentic, and she asked good questions too. Like, Daddy or Dad, whatever she called him. If you say you didn't hear this, then how can you know about that? Are you lying? And that's the kind of thing a kid would ask, and a kid would notice.
Yeah, you're right. I'm being mean. But there was a point where she had this look, and I was certain that she was the one that pushed her mom down the stairs or something.
It's not what happened. Anyway, so that's it for the international winner. What was the domestic winner?
L'Artiste.
Okay, now you read that in French, but it's...
The Artist.
The domestic film, which, yeah, somehow is a French production. But here's the thing. This is pretty interesting. For the first time since the very first film we saw, which I believe was 1929, the winner of the Academy Award was a silent film. Yeah, they made a silent film in 2011. How cool is that?
It was incredible. And black and white, of course. Just technically, it had all of these props, things of the era, costumes that were matching incredibly well, vehicles of all sorts. So they did it in... It was such a true, captivating, brilliant take on the era, on the style of film and storytelling. And had cards, right? Like the actual written... dialogue,
right.
and action, I guess, the narration cards that they were so familiar in a lot of
films. I mean, this would have passed for a silent film in the 1920s easily. They even changed the film speed so that it would match. You know how people back in those days seemed to be moving faster because the speed of the film was different back then. And they emulated that perfectly. They used appropriate cameras. And it's just, they filmed it in color, but they basically changed it to black and white. And it worked. It really did work. Now, here's the thing. It's not just a silent movie. It's a silent movie about silent movies, meaning that we start off with, we see this star of a silent film, in a silent film, being watched by an audience. The film ends, the star is there to talk to the audience. And this is where I thought, maybe we have the wrong version because we're not getting any sound. And the story about the guy who's in the film is also silent. So once you realize what's going on, it gets really entertaining. And then the subject changes to, well, you know what? There are these new kind of films coming out that are talkies, where you talk. And this guy, the star of the silent film, is adamant against that, saying no. And it's something that many people were against at the time because it's a whole other skill that you need to learn. And this guy was fine in the silent films. But as a result of that, his stardom started to slip. And then there's another section of the movie where all of a sudden there is sound, except he can't make the sound. Everything around him is making sound, but not him. And it's driving him crazy. It's a dream. And that was just another phase of this film that made it unique, made it really stand out. So the whole thing is basically about the struggle that this guy has trying to deal with changing technology, something that we can all be familiar with today. And where does it go from there? It's a fascinating thing to watch. And I won't spoil it for you, but eventually, in the end, he does say a couple of words. And the brilliant part, I thought, was that when you hear his voice, it's not at all what you expected it to be like. And that, in fact, was the case with many silent film stars, where their voice just didn't match the persona that they were putting forth, and their careers fell apart as a result of that. So there is so much to take in here. The Artist is the title, 2011?
It is, and the cast has some conversation about the production, and what I took away is that it was very much something you need to take in and really digest, maybe more than one time. I had a big problem with how much talking there was when there was no silent stuff, and we'd seen so much of silent stuff before. I was almost disappointed myself for not being able to tolerate the lack of sound.
Well, here's the thing. Silent films are like that. There's a lot of talking without translating it to what was being said. So they emulated that, too, very well. Anyway, we're out of time. Our feature is over. Thank you, everybody, for listening to that. Now, we're going to go out with some Iranian hip-hop, which was not easy to find, believe me, considering music is not encouraged in that culture right now. This is something that hopefully people will enjoy from an artist known as Yas, Y-A-S. Write to us, otw@2600.com. Stay tuned for Finn. Good night.
So long. یه مار چار و سخت با این بارس درد با این باعث مرد غیرت ایرانی یار صاحب زن حرفا بحثا رفت رو اعصاب شد کابوس بعد کمکم خواست به صدا در بیار ناموس من دختر ایرانی ناموس تو ناموس من چرا کاری کردیم خودش بره به پابوس من چطوری دلمون اومد با آب روی یک دختر با بازی کنی که زندگیش داشته مختر تو کنج اتاق تکه داده اون تنها خدا عشقو به اون هدیه داده بود شبها ولی حالا شب و روز چشما تشنه عشق طوری که دیگه تموم شده بود چشمه عشق گفت به خدا ای خدای من فقط یه خواهش به من بگو همه اینا فقط یه خوابه ولی خواب نیست دخترک بیدار بود دخترک بازیچه یه جماعت بیکار بود بیمار شد از صحبت های کسی و نابجا ای خدا بده دختر رو از دستیزه ها نجا از کجا رفته غیرته من روی این شهر شلو تموم شهر پر شده از مردم سر تا پا بیمار شد از صحبت
زحمت‌های کثیف و نابجا، ای خدا بده دختر رو از دسیسه ها نجات. سابه ها همچین بلایی سرت نیومده که اگه بیاد میگی بلا از این بدتر اومده، ولی کدوم ما جامون رو بذاشتیم جاش که ببینیم چی میکشه ما هم بسوزیم باش. کاش یاس میمردم چی روزی نبود که غیرت بمیره به دست یه خنجر عمود. خنجر به دست یکی بود ما هم کارشیم که توی جهنم ما هم با اون هم بالشیم. خطاب اون پسر تو چقدر میتونی کثیف باشی، کاری که تو کردی بدتر بود از اسیب باشی. تو که حاضری خود رو بکشی واسه حسین، تو که محرم و سیاه میبوشی واسه حسین. حسین گفت اگه دین نیست باشیم آزاد من نماسه یه دیدی یه کثیف کنی بازار گرد. اون دختر زحمت ها کشی تا بهش رو ردی رسی، واسه لذت بردن از اسمش یه مهلتی بدی. گفتی صحبتی جدیده نوبت همینه با سرعتی عجیب چه تهمتی زدی.
از کجا رفته غیرت من روی این شهر شلو؟ تموم شهر پر شده از مردم سر تا پا.
اگه این هم سر نزد خودتو تبرعه کنی، تو عقل داشتی خودتو رهبر خودی، ولی دونست خودت رفتی عقب گناه. پس بشین تو منتظر غضب خدا، ولی نماهی رو هر وقت که عذاب بگیری تا سر، و بدون که راه واسه یه برگشت باز هست. باید راه بست به تبلیغ بیشتر و سعی کرد برای تبدیل خیشتر به انسان واقعی با همه صفات، با انصاف و واقع بین حاضر واسه دفاع. میگم به اونایی که واسه باقی حرف تشتن، شک نکن تو همین حالا سیدی رو بشکن.